This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, I'm Meera Sivasodhi. It's Health and Living, and today we're discussing atrial fibrillation or in the heart. Dr. Surinder Kaur Kelly, she's a consultant cardiologist and electrophysiologist from Institute Jantung Negara. We're going to be trying to understand what what atrial fibrillation really is. A lot of people refer to electrophysiologists as the electricians when it comes to your heart, but some of us can't put this concept of electricity and our hearts together. How does that come together? Dr. Surinder is here to explain that further. Welcome to the show, Dr. Surinder. How are you today?
Oh, I'm fine. Thank you, Meera Sivasodhi.
Would you like to tell me what is this electricity that's going on? And who's making this electricity for the functioning of our heart?
Okay. So we all know that the two parts of the heart, one are the guys or the plumbers generally who clean up all the blockages in your arteries to the heart. And we well are the electricians who fix up the electrical activities in your heart, may it be short circuits, may it be too slow, or may it be too fast. That's generally our work. If you're talking about the heartbeat, right, the heart rhythm starts from the top chamber of the heart, which is known as the sinoatrial node, and it travels down to the AV node, that's somewhere in the middle of the heart, and right down to your ventricles, and then it pumps out the blood and gives out your heartbeat. So generally, when you are sitting down, not doing anything, your heart rate should range anywhere between 50 to 80 or 90 beats a minute. But when you start walking, it will increase to give you more oxygen and a better circulation.
Okay. And when you say atrial fibrillation, you said it can either be an abnormal rhythm or something not quite right. Could you explain what atrial fibrillation really is?
Okay. So your normal heartbeat is very regular. It beats in a regular fashion. And if you know how to feel your pulse, you will feel that it's a regular pulse. In atrial fibrillation, what exactly happens is the upper chambers of the heart, which are known as the atria, they beat in a rather irregular fashion. And that is what is known as atrial fibrillation, or in short, people call it AFib.
Okay, and fib. That's what they keep saying, fib, yeah, all the time.
Yes.
Okay, but do you see many of these cases at IGN?
Well, because of my nature of a job, being an electrician, so a fair amount of my patients fall in this category.
And why is it so common?
Well, atrial fibrillation comes along, usually is associated with a bag of other issues. Other risk factors, mainly those people who have had a previous heart attack, who have high blood pressure, who have diabetes, they may have atrial fibrillation. And that forms quite a fair amount of our group of patients that we see in IJN.
So they have an abnormal heart rhythm?
Yes, sometimes they will have an abnormal heart rhythm.
Okay. And could it be congenital as well? Can you be born with atrial fibrillation, meaning something not quite right with the heart?
If you have some structural abnormalities from the beginning when you're born, then there is a possibility. But generally, it is acquired along the way when you're associated with other diseases of the heart.
And I understand there are many types of abnormal heart rhythms, and atrial fibrillation is one of the most common ones?
Yes, atrial fibrillation is the most common arrhythmia a patient seeks for treatment for palpitations at the hospital.
Okay, and is the prevalence very high in Malaysia?
We don't have the exact numbers because of our epidemiological data is not there at the moment. But generally, if you look at the world, it's about 0.4 to 1% of the population that has atrial fibrillation. And it increases as you get older. The prevalence increases at the age of 80 have about, there's an 8% prevalence in the age group of 80 and above.
Okay, so what's the big deal, Dr. Surinder? If you do have an abnormal heart rhythm, can't we just live with it?
Now, if you have atrial fibrillation, what is worrying about patients who have atrial fibrillation is the association with stroke. And the strokes that are associated with atrial fibrillation can be very, very devastating. So it's very, very important that when you have been diagnosed with atrial fibrillation that you should seek an advice of your doctor to see what treatment needs to be done.
And how would you know you have an abnormal heart rhythm?
Generally, patients, when they have atrial fibrillation, what they feel will be they feel their heart beating very fast, or when they walk, they feel tired. But for some people, it's just picked up on an incidental ECG when they go in for a medical checkup.
Is it very clear from an ECG that somebody is experiencing atrial fibrillation?
Now, because the atrial fibrillation may not be there all the time, all right, so it doesn't mean that you don't have it on that ECG, you're not having atrial fibrillation, because it can be a, it can be paroxysmal. That means it comes and goes. So the day you go and see the doctor, at that particular time, you may not, your ECG may be in sinus rhythm, but you may be having atrial fibrillation.
So a lot of them go undetected as such.
Exactly.
But, you know, then what do we do? Is there any other way of making sure that, you know, most of us who do have atrial fibrillation pick it up?
So generally, when a patient has atrial fibrillation, what they will have is they will have symptoms of palpitations, and they will go seek a doctor's advice. And usually what the doctor will do, they will give them some recorders which will be able to pick up these episodes of atrial fibrillation. There are many, many kinds of recorders. If your symptoms are more frequent, then the recorders are given for a shorter period of time. But if the symptoms come at a, after a longer period of time, then you have to give them recorders that can pick it up for a longer period of time. So you have recorders which are given on a daily basis. You have recorders which can be given up to 2 weeks. You have recorders which can be given up to a few months. And currently, in fact, there are screening tools. In fact, people have watches nowadays which
yes.
you can pick up this atrial fibrillation.
So do you think our wearable gadgets can actually pick this up?
They are, but the one that is the one that is FDA approved is known as a Cardia, which is a screening, which is a gadget which can pick up your ECG just by your using your fingers.
I see. And should all of us go out and get one now?
Or,
if only 1% of the population perhaps has atrial fibrillation.
I don't think everyone needs to go get it. But if you are above 65 and you do have palpitations and your doctor can't seem to pick it up, it's a good gadget for you to go and get one.
But how do you know you're not having an anxiety attack, or it's just something that's very emotionally, you know, linked? I mean, we all have palpitations. We imagine we have palpitations at least. Or is our idea what palpitations are and yours differ?
Yes. So generally, if anxiety and AF, there will be a bit of a difference. You can see a patient who complains of palpitation and has other risk factors associated with, you will probably look very hard to find out what the patient is complaining of, and you would use tools to, you know, to confirm that what the patient's palpitations are, whether it is atrial fibrillation or is it something else.
But your cardiologist will be able to tell that.
Yeah, exactly.
If we don't go to, and most of us, the first port of call is not the cardiologist, Dr. Surinder. I mean, are GPs trained to pick this up? And if it's, you know, not detected very easily as well, I can imagine even the GPs would miss it, right? I mean, what is your advice to general practitioners or other doctors to be on alert, looking out for atrial fibrillation?
Well, if a patient who has risk factors associated with atrial fibrillation, then, and if the patient does complain of palpitations, such as I feel my heart fluttering and I walk, I feel breathless, then I think the patient needs to be referred to a cardiologist. And henceforth, from there, we can take over and see what is exactly the patient's complaints and try to screen for atrial fibrillation.
Okay.
As I told you, the atrial fibrillation only may not be there all the time. It comes and goes, so it might be needed to be screened.
Okay. So an ECG will be able to tell whether or not you could be a possible candidate. That's if it's picked up during an ECG.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. We're discussing atrial fibrillation. It is us having an abnormal heart rhythm. There are many types of these abnormal heart rhythms. Atrial fibrillation is the most common one. As Dr. Surinder explained, our hearts beat about 50 to 80 to 90 beats per minute. That's very normal. Perhaps anything more than that may be of some cause for concern. You may want to see your doctor. Basically, atrial fibrillation is it's the atria, the top part of the heart that actually beats in an irregular fashion, and that's what actually is going on. So we'll come back and find out more about, you know, what are ways in which we can, what can we do to help prevent strokes when atrial fibrillation is not detected, as you said earlier, Dr. Surinder. When it goes undetected, then the chances of a stroke is a lot higher. So we'll come back and have that discussion further as to how to manage an atrial fibrillation better on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Meera Sivasuthi. In the studio with me, Dr. Surinder Kaur Kelly. She's a consultant cardiologist and electrophysiologist at Institute Jantung Negara. We are discussing atrial fibrillation. Very simple terms, an electrophysiologist is somebody who is really the electrician who looks after the electrical wiring in your heart. And Dr. Surinder has explained earlier on how she differs from the other cardiologists who are the plumbers and, you know, how they work on your clogged up arteries. Now she looks at how this whole heart is actually powered and how it functions like that. What happens, you know, if atrial fibrillation goes undetected? We've spoken about that earlier on. You did say that chances of a stroke is a lot higher. Now, it's 15 to 20% of all strokes occur in patients with atrial fibrillation. That's a pretty high number, Dr. Surinder. How do we manage that then?
Okay. Once you're diagnosed with atrial fibrillation, then you need to be on a few drugs, right? So there's two parts to it in managing atrial fibrillation. One is when the patient has, you have to treat the symptoms, right? What the patient complains of, I feel my heart racing, I feel unwell. So those are known as the symptoms. And you would manage your symptoms either with some drugs to control the rate, all right? Or you try give drugs where you try to keep the patient most of the time in their normal heartbeat, which is known as the sinus rhythm. Or you could offer them, if they're very symptomatic, despite all these medications, there are avenues such as ablation, right, where we would treat the it's an invasive procedure to maintain the patient most of the time in sinus rhythm. So those are the technologies for keeping the patient in sinus rhythm or to prevent, to control their symptoms. On the other hand, to prevent a stroke, you need to be on a blood thinner. All right. What happens in atrial fibrillation is when the heart beats irregularly, it tends to form clots in the heart, just like how a car, if it was jerking, it will form, it will choke the spark plugs, right? Exactly. That's exactly what happens in the heart. When you have atrial fibrillation, there will be, the blood doesn't move smoothly and it tends to form clots. And one fine day, these clots will travel up to your brain and you get a stroke. So to, in order to prevent that, you need to take some blood thinners. In the old day, in the all the previous years, what they had was a drug known as a warfarin, which is actually literally like a rat poison. But that...
Really?
Yeah.
What do you mean by rat poison?
That is the drug. That warfarin is rat poison. It's actually warfarin, actually. So what happens is these rats, they are given this warfarin and then they bleed in their brain and that's how they die.
It's an anticoagulant.
Yes, it's an anticoagulant. So the current... So the thing about warfarin is you got to go back to your doctor very frequently to maintain it at a certain level within 2 to 3. And
2 to 3...
That's the range, INR of a 2 to 3. And okay, that's a very difficult range to maintain. All right? So these days, in the last 10 years or so, we have new drugs that have come on board, which are also oral anticoagulants, but which are much easier to take. You do not need to visit your doctor so frequently to get your blood tested. And you can eat anything. There won't be drug-drug interaction as much as with warfarin. And they are known as the newer oral anticoagulants. All right? They are a little bit expensive, but they are much easier to take. And they do not need much monitoring as compared to warfarin. So that's one of the main treatment for stroke prevention at the moment for atrial fibrillation. Of course, there are other ways. There are non-pharmacological ways which we can, if a patient can't tolerate these oral anticoagulants, then there is a non-pharmacological way where we can occlude a little chamber in the left atrium, which is known as the left atrial appendage, where the clots love to sit. And we can occlude that so you can obviate the need of taking an oral anticoagulant, and that's what we call is a watchman.
What is the advantage of a left atrial appendage occlusion, which is to insert? What are you inserting again?
What we are doing is in the left atrium, there is a little chamber which is known as the left atrial appendage. And majority of the time, more than 90% of the time, the clots love to sit in the left atrial appendage. All right? So by removing the left atrial appendage from the, by excluding it out of the whole scenario, by putting an occluder, you are actually reducing the risk of stroke. You do not need to take oral anticoagulant. It removes the need of taking an oral anticoagulant by putting an occluder in the left atrial appendage.
Right. And people who would be suitable for, or people whom you would recommend left atrial appendage occlusion would be those who are not very successful with medication?
Exactly. Those who have many reasons why they can't take anticoagulants. Maybe they have kidney failure or they bleed easily. Then this would be an ideal option.
Okay. You said something about Watchman. Could you explain to us what that is?
So Watchman is what we call a left atrial appendage occluder. In atrial fibrillation, majority of the clots, in fact, more than 90% of the clots, were found to sit in the left atrial appendage, right? Mm-hmm. So by occluding the left atrial appendage, you are reducing the risk of stroke. And Watchman is a device which is done invasively, percutaneously, and it closes off the left atrial appendage.
How so? Is it minimally invasive?
It is minimally invasive.
Okay.
The procedure is done under general anesthesia, and you have to get admitted a day before. It needs an echo to be done to properly size the left atrial appendage. And after that, we will introduce percutaneously the device and seal off the left atrial appendage. It's an umbrella-looking device that closes off the left atrial appendage.
When you say percutaneously, it almost sounds like an angioplasty.
Exactly. It's something like an angioplasty.
Okay. So it's done... it's under general anesthesia, though.
Yes.
In an angioplasty, it's not, though.
No.
Okay.
The reason it's been done under general anesthesia because it needs a transesophageal echo.
Which is
an echo that is put in through your esophagus, all right, so that it can see the chambers of the heart much clearer than it would be just if you were to do an echo the general way, all right, so that you can because the appendage is not very clearly visible on a normal transthoracic echo. So this is a transesophageal echo where you have to, it's like literally like going in for a scope when you have a gastric problem.
Okay.
Right? It's literally the same. So it's very uncomfortable to do a procedure with a patient having a scope through your mouth and then you are from the groin putting in a sheath. So that is why it's done under general anesthesia. As well as to accurately size the device, you need the patient to be a bit more still.
Okay, and so it's like how you would insert a dye for an angioplasty before you actually, send in the stent.
No. So generally, it is basically you would take a picture with just like an angiogram, right? Size the device, for the device.
Yep.
All right, and then deploy the device, somewhat like an angiogram, a little bit more complicated than the angiogram, but somewhat the same.
What are the risks involved in a procedure like this?
The risk involved is because you are going into the atrium. Right, there is a risk that you may perforate the left atrial appendage while doing the procedure, or there might be a risk of a stroke. That risk comes to a region of about 1%. And the success of this procedure is in the region of about 95%.
And I understand not everybody has this Watchman technology?
No, not everyone.
Yeah. IGN being the first in the region.
Yes, IGN is one of the first in this region.
Okay. Have you done it? Have you used Watchman to fix these atrial fibrillation?
Yes, I have done a fair amount of Watchman.
What's that been like? What's it been like working with a different, slightly different way of removing the left atrium?
It is. I find it very rewarding for patients who can't take anticoagulants. And who at least there is an option of doing a non-pharmacological method of, you know, reducing their risk of stroke. And if not, the risk of stroke is high and at least they get a method of where they can, you know, is similar to the risk of reduction of stroke as if you were to take an oral anticoagulant.
It's interesting, earlier on you spoke about how clots are prone to be in the left atrium. What about the right atrium? What's going on there?
No, so the atrial fibrillation actually starts off in the left atrium And there is an out and a pouch there, which is a left atrial appendage. And these clots have been found to mainly sit in the left atrial appendage.
Okay, so what happens in the right atrium? There is a right atrium, I'm sure.
Yeah, there is a right atrium, but they predilectly, because the atrial fibrillation starts in the left atrium, they sit there in the left atrial appendage.
Sure. How has the Watchman device improved how you manage, atrial fibrillation? How have patients taken to this procedure? Are they doing well? You know, are the outcomes good? You know, what's been that experience like?
So the experience at IGN we have, the outcomes are very good, right? We find that patients who can't take oral anticoagulants really benefit from this procedure.
And what is there a downtime? Does it take a long time for them to recover?
The procedure as per se, to put in the Watchman is very fast. It can be as fast as 20 minutes, but it's the preparation that takes time. By the time they come to the lab, they have to be prepared for general anesthesia. The lines have to be set. But per se, the procedure is very fast.
Okay. And does it require a repeat procedure later on?
It doesn't require a procedure coming into the lab, but they definitely need a repeat transesophageal echo to see whether the device is sitting well, whether it has sealed off, and whether there are any more thrombus or clots sitting in the left atrium.
And does the device have a lifespan?
No. What happens is once you put the device in, it endothelizes. That means it blends in with the lining of the left atrium. So it naturally removes that out pouch from the equation of getting a stroke. There's no more left atrial appendage anymore. So there is no appendage in the left atrium for the clots to find a place to go and sit.
Okay. And is this like a synthetic device or is it a...
It's a nitinol device.
What does that mean?
It's made of a nitinol material, right? So it eventually gets endothelized.
Okay.
Like a stent. It's like the stent.
Right. Okay. Mm. And there are many types of these devices, I'm assuming.
There are a couple of other brands in the market, but the one that IGN uses is the Watchman.
Okay. Is it a very costly procedure?
It's about the cost of if you were to go for an angioplasty.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Not too bad, I'm assuming.
Not too bad. The fact that if you were to have a stroke, it'll be even more expensive to handle a person who has a stroke. You might have to send him to a nursing home. You've got so many other people to take care of. And this really takes the equation out of the...
Are there people who should not be going under the Watchman's... Watchman procedure? Or is everyone a candidate?
Not everyone is a candidate because there are certain conditions wherein you may have a prosthetic valve sitting in the heart, right? You may have had a mitral valve replacement. And in those cases, if the left atrial appendage was not removed during the surgery, they will not be a suitable candidates for a Watchman. Okay. So there are people who will not be suitable for it.
You know, if anyone were to have this conversation with their cardiologist, what are some of the key questions they should be asking in regards to atrial fibrillation and the left atrial appendage occlusion? What are some key questions? Because I'm sure not everybody is trained to do this Watchman procedure, for an example. You need to be doing enough of these procedures to be comfortable with it. How long have you been doing this?
Well, I've been doing it from we started way back in 2010. We've been doing it since then.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
That's a very long time. So key questions that you should be asking or exploring if the pharmacology path is not working for you to manage atrial fibrillation, what are some of the questions you should be asking your doctor?
Well, you could ask your doctor, if they're not suitable for oral anticoagulation, they find that they are bleeding most of the time, or their kidneys are not doing well, that the doctor says that, you can't take the newer oral anticoagulants. You may have to take warfarin, or you are having frequent falls, and you forget to take your medications. This will be the ideal patients who may benefit from a Watchman device.
Okay. You know, Dr. Surinder, although you get rid of that left atrium, clots can still form in other parts of the body, right?
Exactly.
So it's not really a full solution to atrial fibrillation, really.
Yep, you're absolutely right. But when the studies that have been done with warfarin and compared to Watchman, they were non-inferior to the warfarin.
Okay. All right.
Suggesting that they're as good as taking warfarin. So someone who had a high risk of a stroke and needed to be on an oral anticoagulant, whether you give them a warfarin or you give them a Watchman, they will do equally well. In fact, once the procedure is done and they have passed over the period of the complications, they appear to be much superior than they were to take warfarin.
I see. Okay. So that's a slight advantage there. Yes. But so I suppose only if non-coagulants don't work for you, then this is an option to reduce the risks of strokes. Nobody's saying you're going to be free of any risks. It just reduces it. Okay, fantastic. What will be your message on atrial fibrillation?
Well, the most important part of atrial fibrillation is, of course, stroke prevention. And it's important to diagnose if you have AF early so you can seek the appropriate treatment.
And symptoms, once again, is your heart rating at a very fast
heart rate.
Yeah, very fast heart rate. You feel tired.
You have palpitations.
Yep.
You feel you can't walk. You get breathless easily. That would be some of the main symptoms.
Thank you very much for joining me today. Dr. Surinder Kaur Kelly, she's a consultant cardiologist and electrophysiologist from Institute Jantung Negara, speaking to us about atrial fibrillation on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.